Hey there, mulleteers. This is the Lethal Mullet Podcast, episode number 202. That's 202 for you out there listening tonight. And we are going to be heading into the wild of the 1980s tonight, looking at the great series called V, starting with, of course, the 1983 miniseries, which kickstarted the whole franchise. It was written and directed by Kenneth Johnson, came out in 1983, and began what would become, of course, the V franchise as we know it today. This was a great mixture of everything that was 1980s with, of course, alien invasion story and a bit of horror to it as well. And, of course, starred Jane Badler, Frank Ashmore, Donnie Bartlett, Diane Carey, Michael Durrell, Robert Englund, and many others, which we're going to be chatting about tonight. You can find these still on DVD in places and, of course, online. But I tell you what, there was nothing quite like it to experience what it was that was this fantastic franchise back in the 1980s, V. And we're going to be looking at that tonight here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
All right. Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? He's coming in by chopper.
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, man, how you going?
G'day, man, how you going? This is the mullet. Yes, this is the Lethal Mullet. Adam O'Brien here, Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia for tonight's episode of... of course, the show, the flagship show here on the Lethal Mullet Network, episode number 202, V. Not V for Vendetta, folks, just V, just plain old V. Of course, science fiction show that pretty much started back in 1983. It's an alien invasion one. It's all about the 1980s. It's all a bit of a satire in some ways. It's also a bit of a real look at the 1980s, I think, more than anything. It's an interesting series. It really is. In its main part was, of course, you know, coming in the hot on the heels of, you know, a number of great science fiction shows and, you know, science fiction in general, I think, you know, was really at a peak thanks to things like, of course, Star Trek, Star Wars, and, of course, many of the other stuff that was coming out of the late 70s and early 1980s. And 83 was the perfect time for something like this to come along. And it's an interesting series nonetheless. In 1983, we had the release of this miniseries. And the miniseries was one that certainly has been watched on VHS since and, of course, DVD. And I'm sure you can see it on Blu-ray somewhere or even on digital now as well, streaming somewhere. And it is a series which was, you know, well made at the time. I certainly think it between that and the music, everything, it was a really complete package and one that really made you want to watch each episode as it came up too. And what's great about it too is that, you know, it's one that's been able to, again, continue too. So is V, The Final Battle, which, believe it or not, I saw first before I saw anything. I never actually got to see the original run of this. Got to see it later. And there's, of course, been V, the TV series as well, which, you know, we've got some people that we know quite well from this podcast that are guests that have been in that show as well too. So there's quite a legacy to the series, obviously, too, a little bit later on. You know, there's different shows and obviously – there's obviously the 2009 reboot done by ABC in the States, which was, of course, connected to that too. But also there's different projects over the years which have been very close to, of course, the same feel. What I think too is great is that, you know, this is certainly one that's constantly talked about, you know, when it comes to, you know, hit shows at the time, but also shows that are really remembered quite well. And I think that too is something that's quite, you know, prevalent when it comes to, you know, TV shows. You know, what do we remember in science fiction at the time? Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers, obviously all the others at the time, which really pushed, you know, the envelope of what they were able to do in the 1980s due to budgets and stuff like that too. So we're going to get into that tonight and, you know, really look at, you know, where it's gone and, you know, is there another series or another movie maybe that will come out of this? Who knows? All that and more here tonight, as we head into, of course, let you know how you can catch this show and many others like it.
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about deep thought. And deep thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide. Who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course, Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
I guess it's news time, folks, but quickly, yes, Deep Thought will be back for episode 4 soon when we can tie down Dan Hadley to a chair and, of course, put the orb number 42 in front of him and ask him, of course, for the question of the universe itself. So what is happening right now is, of course, what's happening everywhere is, of course, the large blue humanoid aliens of course, the Avatar. That is, of course, the Na'vi are everywhere, folks, because Jim Cameron has gone all out and really started to promote this huge, humongous project that he's got. It's called The Way of the Water. There's something about water and Jim Cameron. I'll tell you what, folks, he's really back into this big time, and he hasn't spent one iota on making, of course, the Blu-ray or the, shall we say, the cleaned up and HD edition of The Abyss. It's all we want, folks. We don't care about special features here or anything like that, but we want to see the director's cut that he was meant to put together of this and just pump it out there, folks. We need this because it is still, I think, personally, his best film next to The Terminator. It is up there with, of course, as good as Aliens as far as I see it. But anyway, yes, you've got The Way of the Water coming. We've got news that obviously Jim Cameron wrote a script that was going to come out, and it was going to be pretty ambitious for a second Avatar, but unfortunately it didn't work, and it basically put him back on the drawing board to create something else when it comes to, you know, this franchise. And of course we've got what we got, which is The Way of the Water, which does look fantastic. At the outset, it does to me look like more Avatar, but this time not in the jungles or the bush, but out in the water, which is fantastic. It is what it is, and I'm sure it's going to be, you know, just as amazing visually. Let's just hope the story can meet the visuals. As, you know, I think the big thing is that's what really outweighed the original. Even though the story was, for what it was, pretty straightforward, the visuals and the world and the world building, second to none, is why that film is the success it is. But You can't put it down to James Cameron. When it comes to, of course, sequels, that's where he really excels. Although he's great at world building, you know, building on the drama and, of course, the chaos of what can happen in, of course, the middle point of a trilogy, or in this case, a second film, will make things interesting. Apparently, he's got everything up to Avatar 4 and 5 planned at this stage, but we are going to be waiting on him to see, of course, how Avatar 2 and, of course, number 3 fare out there in, of course, the world. You know, if they're successful enough, then we'll definitely get 4 and 5. And I dare say he's going to have a fair crack at it. But he's also got, of course, Battle Angel Alita, which has got a sequel that has been talked about, and other projects that he wants to do himself. So he's definitely got things outside of Avatar that he wants to pump out. So be interesting to see what he wants to do with it, what's going to happen. Are we going to see Avatar, as in the Na'vi themselves, going into space? Maybe we're going to see another planet other than, of course, the same one there, of course. So will we see that? Who knows? I'm keen to see how this all comes together. And obviously he always talked about doing a prequel novel, which would set up how the planet was found, how obviously the human element came in, of course, and started looking for, of course, unobtainium. Of course, the mineral that they're ripping apart the planet to find, and, of course, build upon everything that goes there too. So lots more coming there, folks. Now, news for, of course, us here, of course, at Lethal Mullet, is, of course, we hit the episode number 200, and, of course, thanks to, of course, Richard Epcar for joining us for that one. Looking at, of course, James Bond, we always want to look at James Bond with him when we could, because we've done it in the past on previous podcast channels, Oz Fans Radio. I had him on that one, and, of course, even on Jogcast, if I remember that far back too. But also we have, in the middle of this too, folks, the next lineup of films which we're going to be looking at. And I've got quite a smorgasbord of different styles of productions, different franchises that we're going to be looking at. And the big one too, folks, is we're going to be looking at some real timepieces in terms of period and stuff like that too. So we've got the Lorenzo Lamas series of Snake Eater, which we're going to be looking at. So there's three films there, and that really kicked him into gear and becoming pretty much the action sensation. And, of course, Renegade on TV. We're also going to be looking at one of my favorites, folks. This is one that's a little bit hard to find out here in Australia, Zone Troopers, Tim Thomason. We're also going to be looking at Hard Boiled, Chow Yun-Fat's great film, of course, with John Woo. Lots of double gun in that. And, of course, that whole film's being copied a number of times by the Americans. We're also going to be looking at The Bodyguard, which is a Sonny Chiba film, which, of course, the great quote that's said by Jules in, of course, Pulp Fiction comes from this film. Death Before Dishonor, we're going to be looking at. That's a classic VHS hit from back in the 80s. Very much, you know, is a tough US Marine one, if I do believe, remember right. It's been a while since I watched it, but I'm going to watch it again, this time on DVD, not VHS. But, of course, the lead in that one was from a TV show called Hunter, if I remember right. Eastern Condors, of course, with Yuen Biu, and, of course, Sammo Hung. And, of course, some great action talent in that one, which I've got to tell you about, folks. And, of course, Yasuaki Kurata-san. Kurata-san is in that movie too, folks. Yes, it's going to be great. Accident Man, we're going to look at the first film, and hopefully by the time we get that too, I'll have access to the sequel. We can watch that too. And big shout-out to Scott Adkins. We're big fans here of him, of course, too. The 13th Warrior, which is, of course, a great film, which all I can say is The Eaters of the Dead I've read recently, so we're going to get into that. Long Kiss Goodnight, of course, Samuel L. Jackson in that one too, of course. And, of course, you gotta say, Gina Davis does a fantastic job leading that film. It's tough as nails. Screamers, of course, classic science fiction horror film. And to top it all off, Army of Darkness, folks. Yes, Evil Dead 3. And now that I've got the Screwhead Edition, well, we're going to get diving into that one too.
Hi, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be? Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy, D, you know. Oh, wow.
Right,
yeah.
Mate.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage. And enjoy chatting about, you know, films and all that sort of stuff. You know? Well, here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
All right, it's time to chat about V, folks. Let's get into the plot first, because I think that's the big part here that really is the driving run of this. So, aliens arrive on Earth in these massive 50 huge flying saucers, folks. They're called motherships, and they're over cities and across the world. For those that didn't grow up the series, it's a little bit like in Independence Day when the alien ships turn up there. Actually, pretty much exactly like that. They all reveal themselves on the rooftops of the United Nations, and that's in New York City. And they look human, but of course they're wearing glasses to protect eyes. And of course, from here too, their voices are changed to more human-like too. They call themselves visitors, and they come in friendship, and of course bring with them technology and all forms of different stuff there too, which of course in turn they come to Earth to seek help and get chemicals and certain minerals to aid in their failing world. They've got a world that's needing help. And it's meant to be a planet around the orbit of this massive star called Sirius. Of course, visitors then promise to, of course, give them, give humanity all this alien technology that they've got in to help humankind as well in for their thanks, obviously, of giving help to this alien race. From here, of course, the governments give, big thanks, and of course, they take on all that the visitors want. From here, the visitors come down, and of course, their leader is John. Of course, the deputy in charge of there is Diana. And from here, of course, they begin to have influence over the humankind, of course, human military, and of course, human governments. This is when things start to happen and, of course, change in our daily life. So from here, of course, scientists become hostile in the media, of course, against what's happening. And, of course, the government, too, put restrictions on different people and places and, of course, certain things that people are allowed to do. From here, too, of course, no one's allowed to actually spend time looking on the visitors inside the ships to a certain extent. There's, like, obviously things that they're trying to keep away. And, of course, anyone that does find anything is seen as an absolute loony, as somebody that's obviously outside the norm. Of course, from here, too, certain scientists are made to believe or put out into, of course, the public what is, you know, happening and vice versa, too. So this is where it gets really interesting, is that, you know, people don't really know what's going on behind the scenes with these visitors. This is where, of course, Michael Donovan comes in, who's a reporter and is basically a television journalist, a cameraman, who is able to, of course, get on board one of the visitors' ships. And he basically sees, of course, the real thing that's going on, that there's a facade. And, of course, the human skin that these aliens have is, of course, a very thin synthetic layer. And, of course, they wear contact lenses, because underneath all this, they are actually reptilians, carnivorous reptilians. And, of course, they're here to eat humans. Yeah, that's right, folks. You heard it right. So there's the horror quota of this whole thing too. From here, of course, Donovan, we get to see in opening here this series in the great action sequence, actually, where we get to see him, through a helicopter and every other thing too, where he takes footage of the alien ships flying over El Salvador and records this whole thing, of course, the mothership, all that sort of too. And, of course, he's trying to bring out expose about it, all these things too. But, of course, they're coming in and basically becoming friends with humanity is what they're trying to put out. But Donovan's one of the first that really figures it out. And, of course, through that, we start to see what's really happening on board the ships and stuff like that too. Science around the world, obviously, too, as we said, they're being discredited for everything that's going against, obviously, the populace too. And it just shows you how, you know, popular, people, or in this case, politicians, people in power, are swayed by, of course, the visitors and their technology. And, of course, everything that goes with being changed into what they are too. From here, of course, there's some humans that finally decide to put a bit of resistance. So the resistance begins, and of course, at the end of the day, we get these great characters which we know so well from this series through this resistance. They're all walks of life, mothers, fathers, sisters, friends, and of course, even one of the visitors turns on his own kind as well and becomes one of the resistance as well. It's a really interesting story, folks. This miniseries basically ends with the visitors basically controlling Earth. And, of course, Julian Elias basically from here communicating transmission into space to ask others, other alien races out there for help to take over these visitors. So it's an interesting one that definitely opened itself up to sequels. And from here we had V, The Final Battle, which is the one I've had on DVD for years, actually. Bought it in the, I think it was the mid-2000s, and really enjoyed it. Obviously, that was a bit more action to it. There was definitely a bit more, the resistance was already built, so they're really getting into things. And from there we also had those novels and TV show afterwards, which of course, got to say, folks, Richard Epcar was part of. So big shout out to the big man himself, Richard Epcar. Again, you know, always turning up in shows that I least expect. He's done so many projects. To Richard and Ellen, if you're listening tonight, I love you too. You're fantastic. So obviously, too, this is a series which, yeah, really could have kicked in a lot of the franchise sort of stuff that we see today, toys, all that sort of stuff. We'll talk a little bit about it a little bit later, but some of the great things that were planned were the ships, the firearms, or the laser guns that the visitors brought with them. And, you know, there's a number of other things that they had, action figures and stuff like that. I do believe one was made, whether it was put out, I can't remember, but it was one of the visitors in its lizard-like garb, if you like. And, you know, again, it was one of those franchises that was planned to release stuff, but it just never hit the ground running, never got into the shops out there too. And it's a shame because this is a franchise that certainly at the time of the things like the 18, many others like Magnum, and of course, you know, the likes of even He-Man started out. You know, toys were huge. It's a huge trade in the 1980s. And something like V would have just knocked it out of the park with the different designs, particularly the space shuttles and stuff like that. It was a really interesting design that was used. And still to this day, it looks fairly modern for what it was. So a big shout out to the designers on this, because it, again, those ships built in, of course, the look, everything, even down to the red outfits that the visitors wore. It was just fantastic, folks. So let's get into some of the cast, because, I mean, you know some of these people quite well. So there's kind of two casts here, folks. Obviously, there's human characters and the visitors. We're going to start with the visitors, folks. So Diana is played by, of course, Jane Badler. Is awesome in the role. It's a fantastic role. And obviously one, too, that I think, you know, it's pretty iconic. So obviously Jane, too, interesting, is Australian, American-Australian, actually, known for Diana mainly. And what's great is that she came back for, of course, the 2011 one as well. And again, playing an alien named, guess who? Diana. we got John, played by Richard Hurd. And of course, yeah, he's been a lot of material over the years. I think this would be one of the most iconic ones. Playing John is definitely the one that I remember him for mostly. We also have, of course, Andrew Lewis Preen, Prine. And obviously, he's been everything from film, stage, and of course, television. Frank Ashmore plays Martin in this as well. We've also got Robert Englund plays Willie. Now, obviously, he's a character who is basically friends with a lot of the humans and obviously gets close to one of them quite well in this too. But also, I think great thing in this is we get to see something different from Robert, who's obviously known for, of course, Nightmare on Elm Street, playing Freddy Krueger. And obviously, too, one of the great ones that we remember him for, of course, is Ford Fairlane, where he plays one of the killers in that one, too. Brian, played by Peter Nelson. He is also in The Final Battle as well. I think it's great. Barbara, played by Jenny Newman, Lorraine, played by, of course, Greta Blackburn, and, of course, the visitor captain, played by Stack Pierce. He was a boxer and also a professional baseball player too. And he's been in a lot of work since the 1970s everything from, of course, Room, Triple Two, Mannix, Mission Impossible, and, of course, he was in, of course, this series as well. All right, let's go to it. Of course, folks, the human character is Mike Donovan, played by, of course, the great Mark Singer. Obviously, he's been in quite a bit of stuff, folks. For you fans out there that are, of course, Planet of the Apes fans, he was in the second, I think, or the third episode, if I remember right, of course, of the Planet of the Apes TV series and about the gladiators, along with, of course, Conan's dad. Yes, that's right. Conan's dad was in that one. And, of course, he's known for Beastmaster film series as well. And, of course, he played Matt Cantrell in Dallas. He's been a lot of material, folks. Very fit guy. And he's, of course, great as Mike Donovan. Juliet Parrish, played by Faye Grant. You'll know Faye if you see her. Obviously, she's in this material and a lot of others too. So she's been stage. And she's a singer as well. We've also got Ben Taylor, played by Richard Lee Lawson. He was also in Poltergeist as well. He's pretty good in this, got to say. Caleb Taylor, played by Jason Bernard in this as well. Fantastic in the role. Elias Taylor, played by Michael Wright, who was in, of course, Streamers. He's also in, of course, Sugar Hill and a number of other films too. Fantastic. Robert Maxwell, played by Blair Tefkin. Polly Maxwell, played by Vivica Davis. Abraham Bernstein, played by Leonardo Camino, I should say. And, of course, you'll know Leonardo Camino, of course, for his work in some, of course, David Lynch material and many others. Of course, he was in Dune. That's right, folks. He was indeed in Dune because, how do I know? Because he was. Obviously, he has been in a lot of material, and he's certainly somebody that's well worth putting in any film for some amazing characters he's played. He was in The Monster Squad in 1987 as the scary German guy. And he was also, believe it or not, he participated in the invasion of Normandy in, of course, 1944. And he was landing with a second wave. So thank you for your service. That's amazing. And, of course, it went into, of course, after the war, into Broadway and, of course, becoming an actor. And he's done so much material, folks. Started in 61 with, of course, Mad Dog Cole. All the way through to, of course, my favorite, of course, Dune. Then The Monster Squad, Moonstruck, The Seventh Sign, folks. Q&A, you might remember that. And, of course, Hudson Hawk. It goes on, folks. Waterworld, he's also in. How good is that? Hannibal, and of course, the last one here, the film roles, is Before the Devil Knows You're Dead in 2007. But there's a lot of folks that will know, of course, him by his face, and fantastic he was, you know. We've also got, Ruby Ingalls, played by Camilla Ashland, Christine Walsh, played by Jenny Sullivan, Arthur Dupre, played by Hansford Rowe, Harmony Moore, played by Diana Kavita. So let's have a look at some of the origins of this series too. So this whole project was inspired by Sinclair Lewis' anti-fascist novel It Can't Happen Here from 1935. And, of course, Kenneth Johnson even had an adaptation titled Storm Warnings in 1982. It was presented at NBC for being made into a miniseries. But they basically rejected that version and said it was too cerebral. And, of course, at the time, we've got so much science fiction going on, he decided to script it into a series which would, of course, be built around science fiction but have the same message. Of course, from here, of course, we've got a lot of historical influences which became part of the design of this. And everything from the visitor's emblem is very much like the Nazi swastika. Their uniform is very much like the SS uniforms. And everything, like, down to their weapons, which are quite Luger-like, you know, they look like the weapons that the obviously the German army were using. So there's a lot of that sort of World War II aesthetic propaganda and all that sort of stuff, how it, of course, got into government and, of course, how people react and, of course, then turn into, of course, resistance as well. So it's very, very interesting how that sort of, you know, you could move that into a science fiction setting and still, I think, if anything, make it just as interesting as it would be in the original idea that he had. So the two-part miniseries goes for about 200 minutes, and the first part was the one of the most popular programs to come out, and of course, not just in obviously the States, but I mean worldwide, it was huge out here in Australia as well. From there, of course, spawned the sequel, the Final Battle, which rounds out the story because again, you're leaving it out for a cliffhanger. Obviously, they were looking to do something further with it. And, of course, then the series, which ran from 84 to 85 and basically ran it a year after the final battle. But, of course, Johnson actually left during the production of the final battle because he wasn't getting along with what NBC were trying to do at the same time with it too. In 2005, V was known as one of the best miniseries on DVD as well. Again, it's great to watch some of this stuff on that or the digital format where it's given a chance to really get back into what makes those series great. And yeah, it really is great. Of course, from here, there was going to be a sequel. And Johnson was trying to campaign to get another revival on it as well. And even had a sequel novel written, which is called V, The Second Generation, which is 20 years after the original series. And didn't take into account the final battle or the TV series. Of course, Warner Brothers at the time, they basically declined any offer to continue that and what Johnson had planned. From there, basically, they had you know, an idea where it would have come through. Johnson basically was not part of the remake. It was done in 2009. But Jane Badler and Mark Singer appeared in the second season of it as well. And I remember watching that one too when it came out in 2009 on DVD. It wasn't too bad. I didn't mind it. It's nowhere near the caliber of the first. But what's interesting is in 2018, Daisy Liu Studios basically came up with the idea that they're going to produce a feature film of V. It was going to be written, directed by Kenneth Johnson, produced by John Hermanson, Barry Opper, and of course, Johnson. And, yeah, again, bring that whole thing to, of course, the big screen. So that was 2018, so it's been a few years now. Whether that's still going ahead, who knows. And, again, always really, really interesting when that sort of things come apart too. So the miniseries released as V, the original series on VHS during the 90s and later on 2001, it came out in DVD, which is the one I've got. It was in 4:3 full screen format as originally broadcast on TV, while the DVD release is given a matted version in 16:9 widescreen format. The miniseries was originally an open mat, but Kenneth Johnson had stated that he had composed the picture to be more or less widescreen safe in the event that it went to theatrical release. Novelization was done by the great A.C. Crispin, and it was a 402-page novelization in 1984 from Pinnacle Books, and it both had the original plus the final battle together. And, of course, The Second Generation in 2008, Tor Books released the original miniseries section of Christmas book with a new epilogue by Johnson. That too. Actually, tell you what, folks, I'm going to try and track those down. There's certainly ones that I haven't seen out there too. Folks, this is a great series. It's certainly one worth going and checking out some of the material. Like I said, the toys were something that we was looked at putting out at one stage there too, of all the different planes or jets, whatever you want to call it. The StarCraft in this as well certainly was headed for bigger things than what it had, but the franchise is still fantastic to this day. It gets a 5 out of 5 here on the Hallenbach Scale, here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.